Listen closely. That's not just paint rolling on a wall. It's artistry. A master painter carefully applying Benjamin Moore Regal Select Eggshell with deftly executed strokes. The roller, lightly cradled in his hands, applying just the right amount of paint. It's like hearing poetry in motion. Benjamin Moore, see the love.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghan Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. In 2011, the Obama administration created a landmark regulation known as the Mercury and Air Toxic Standards, or MATS. They were a first-of-their-kind regulation targeting mercury emissions from coal and oil-fired power plants.
Because we're acting, emissions of mercury and other pollutants, which cause a range of health problems, including neurological damage in children, will decrease significantly.
That, of course, is former President Obama in 2011. Now, the reasoning was fairly straightforward. The Obama EPA said reducing the emissions would bring health benefits that vastly outweighed the cost of installing scrubbers. But now the Trump administration is proposing to undo the rule, saying that the regulations are too costly, not appropriate and necessary, as the Clean Air Act requires. And most importantly, the Trump EPA says the rules overestimated the health benefits of reducing mercury emissions. So this hour on Point, determining the real costs and real benefits of clean air regulations. And you can join us. Do you worry about mercury in the air or in the water and the food you eat? What's the trade-off when it comes to cost-effective regulatory oversight? What price can we or should we put on health? Well, joining us first from Washington is Umer Irfan, a reporter who covers the environment, climate change, and energy for Vox. He's been covering this new proposal from the EPA, and we have links to his stories at onpointradio.org. Umer, welcome to the program.
Hi, Magna. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. This is kind of a complicated topic, so I want to start with just kind of laying down the basics. So back in 2011, when the Obama administration first proposed or put into effect the mercury and air toxic standards, what was their goal? What were they really trying to do?
The main goal was they wanted to make it harder for these power plants to emit these toxic chemical pollutants. And as you mentioned at the top, this is the first set of federal regulations on coal-fired power plants governing these pollutants. The previous governments have tried putting rules in effect before, but this was the first time they've actually been successful. And of course, the main reasoning was that it would improve the health of Americans by limiting exposure to these hazardous chemicals.
Right. And we should note that coal-fired power plants are a source, or at least were the source of, what, almost half of the mercury emissions in the United States?
That's correct. They're the largest source of mercury air pollution.
Okay. And so at that time, what did EPA project in terms of how many lives these regulations would save, or sort of what the quantifiable health benefits were?
Well, they were estimating anywhere between 10,000 to about 17,000 lives would be saved per year by implementing these standards. Now, in terms of attaching a dollar value to that, they estimated this could be upward of $80 billion. And they were including not just reducing these hazardous chemicals, but also some of the other pollutants that would be reduced by necessity by implementing some of these programs. You know, by installing a scrubber that gets rid of mercury, you're also getting rid of particulates. You're also getting rid of sulfur dioxide. And by capturing those benefits, you actually have a much larger estimated benefit from that rule.
Uh-huh.
And that was the key calculation the Obama administration made in justifying this.
Well, there's the rub, right? Those co-benefits, as they're called, because that's exactly what industry has been pushing back on for some time. I mean, to the point where lawsuits were filed, most specifically the most high-profile one, Michigan versus EPA, that went all the way to the Supreme Court. I mean, what has the coal industry been saying, that the Obama administration was looking at health benefits beyond those of what might come from reducing mercury specifically?
That's right. The key argument they're making is that there are already rules that govern particulates, that govern sulfur dioxide emissions and nitrogen oxide emissions from power plants, and those benefits should be calculated specifically from those particular rules. Now, the Obama administration said that, well, by implementing the mercury rules, we're actually seeing an additional reduction in all those other pollutants as well, which is why it's fair to include those benefits. So there's always been this back and forth with the EPA and the industry about, you know, double counting these benefits. The Obama administration's reasoning was that because this rule is causing an additional reduction in all these other pollutants, it's fair to count those as benefits from the mercury rule.
Right. And so, I mean, so here's the thing about environmental regulation, that we are in a world where a lot of the decision making is made around these cost benefit analyses, right? And so the EPA has said that complying with these mercury regulations can cost power producers, the utilities in these with owning these plants, almost what, $10 billion per year as an industry. But as you were saying earlier, the Obama administration, when taking into account what they see as all of the potential health benefits, said that the benefit could be $80 billion. But if I'm reading these numbers right, the industry is saying that if you just look at mercury specifically, the real benefits are vastly smaller, just $6 million?
Yeah, $6 to $8 million is the number that they arrive at. And that's, of course, by defining the benefits of reducing mercury very, very narrowly and in terms of the very meaningful things that you can quantify. So things like emergency room visits or things like, you know, mercury toxic exposure. So things that you can very directly link to mercury and not some of the, you know, knock-on effects that you would see associated with it.
Right. So the underlying argument that now the Trump EPA is saying is that the cost of these regulations is, in their view, orders of magnitude higher than the health benefits, so they want to undo the regulations.
Right. Right now, though, let's be clear, they're not asking to repeal the Obama-era standard, but they are weakening the justification for it. As you mentioned earlier, the appropriate and necessary is the standard under the Clean Air Act, and that's kind of subjective. But when you can show that the cost of implementing a rule is much higher than any benefit, you make it harder to make the case that it's appropriate and necessary. And that's what they're saying, is they want to determine that the Obama rule was not appropriate and necessary and leave the door open to a future rollback of the rule, or that in a future case, if a new power plant comes online, they may not have to be held to those same standards.
Right. You know, I should note that we reached out to Murray Energy Corporation, you know, a big player in the industry here. We invited their CEO, Robert Murray, to the program. They declined, but a spokesperson emailed us a statement that reads very similarly to the statement that was sent to us by the National Mining Association as well. And they both essentially say what you were telling us earlier, that they don't see the need for these mercury regulations, or, well, specifically the co-benefits, right? Because they say the Clean Air Act already requires EPA to directly assess and regulate the impacts of fine particulates. So that double counting that they're pointing to. I mean, don't they have a point?
Well, I mean, that is the argument here. I mean, yes, there are EPA regulations that specifically govern particulate matter, these tiny particles that go deep into the lungs and can cause asthma attacks and heart attacks. And similarly for sulfur dioxide and other compounds that cause smog and other kinds of health problems. But the argument the EPA made under the Obama administration is, even though those rules exist, by adding this additional mercury rule, we're reducing those pollutants even further. So they're saying that we're actually seeing an additional benefit beyond what the existing rules actually say, and that's why it's fair to count those benefits. Now, the industry says that, well, if you want the benefits from reducing particulates, why not just make it under the particulate rule? Why do you have to lump it in with mercury? And, you know, maybe that's something that the courts have to ultimately settle and decide. But for the Obama administration, I mean, that was the calculus that essentially their argument was they weren't double counting because they were seeing an additional benefit by implementing a new rule rather than some of the existing rules that were already in place.
Right. Well, I also want to note that we did reach out to the National Mining Association and requested that their president, Hal Quinn, join us, and they declined. But they sent us the statement that that read very similarly to the one from Murray Energy, as I read just a second ago. Umair, stand by here for just a second, because I want to bring in Janet McCabe. She's joining us from Indianapolis, and she's served in and later led the Office of Air and Radiation at the Environmental Protection Agency during the Obama administration. She played a really key role in framing and implementing the Clean Air Act standards, including the Mercury and Air Toxic Standards, or MATS. Janet McCabe, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks so much for having me.
So we'll dive further into the details here, but I just want to get your take on how much of a change, a philosophical shift, would it be if this EPA, this new EPA proposal went through and the way that the cost and benefits for mercury regulations were calculated changed? I mean, how much of an impact would it have?
Oh, this is hugely significant, and I think you and Umair have put your finger on the importance of this. And one of the things for people to know is that this rule has already been implemented by the utility industry. So it's in the rearview mirror as far as they're concerned, and we can talk about the implications of that in a minute. So in one sense, you might say, well, so why would EPA do this now? And the key reason for them to do it, other than satisfying a commitment that was made to the coal industry, is to make this policy shift where EPA cannot consider health benefits, not just of co-benefits, which are important, very important in and of themselves. But what this proposal says is that EPA can only consider health benefits that can be monetized. And the challenge with public health protection and recognized by Congress under the Clean Air Act is that it can be really difficult to know and quantify the impacts of toxics in our environment on public health. And so over the decades, EPA has not always been able to quantify mm-hmm. every last benefit. That doesn't preclude them under the law from going forward with important rules like this.
Well, so we've just got 30 seconds before a break, but I want to give you the first shot at this next question that's on my mind here.
Okay.
Isn't that a fundamental problem, though, that if we're couching quantifiable costs against difficult to quantify benefits, that you can skew the numbers in whatever way you want to justify whatever regulation you want?
Well, I economists can argue until the cows come home about everything. This EPA, the MATS EPA, the Obama EPA, followed OMB guidance on how to quantify these benefits. And we can talk about that more after the break.
Okay, let's do that. You're hearing Janet McCabe. She served in and led the Office of Air and Radiation at the EPA during the Obama administration. Umair Irfan also joins us as well. He's a reporter who covers climate change and the environment for Vox. And we're talking about the EPA's proposal to change its accounting for costs and benefits to mercury regulations from coal-fired power plants. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about the EPA's new proposal. It's just a proposal at the moment to change how it accounts for the costs and benefits of taking mercury out of the air from coal and oil-fired power plants. It could signal a major shift in even just the underlying philosophy of how we account for how much it costs and what kind of health benefits we get from things like clean air regulations. I'm joined today by Janet McCabe. She served in and led the Office of Air and Radiation at the EPA during the Obama administration when these mercury rules were first put out. Umair Irfan also joins us. He's a reporter who covers the environment for Vox. And I just want to hear a little bit back from 2011 when then EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson first announced the mercury and air toxic standards rule. She said the implementation of the rules would benefit American utility companies.
For the first time in 20 years, they will have certainty about the standards they must meet. And setting national standards for mercury and air toxics will level the competitive playing field and close loopholes for big polluters. Utilities that have already put in pollution control technology will no longer have to compete with those who've delayed their investments.
And by the way, there's it seems as if since 2011, The rule has worked, and mercury emissions have dropped by some 80%. But we also wanted to play a little bit of tape from the current acting EPA administrator, Andrew Wheeler. He is actually also a former energy industry lobbyist whose clients included the major coal mining company Murray Energy. And Wheeler told the Washington Post during a discussion on energy and environmental policy last month that he sees a future for coal, not just in the U.S., but around the globe.
Coal has not yet peaked worldwide in its usage. It continues to expand in China, India, Indonesia, Asian countries. We see a future for coal that will allow coal technology to continue to expand here, and that technology can then be exported to other countries.
That's Acting EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler, who's also a former energy industry lobbyist. Umair Irfan, let's just hit that really quickly here. How much of this rules proposal is Administrator Wheeler just helping out his former clients in the coal industry?
I mean, it's hard to say, but you're right that this is definitely something that Murray Energy asked for. Like Bob Murray literally handed a wish list to the Trump administration of policies he specifically wanted, and this was among them. And but in terms of like what he's saying about coal, I mean, like, yes, it is true that coal is still increasing worldwide in use, but in the United States, it's declining. Coal plants are shutting down left and right, and the industry is losing ground, not because of regulations, but because of competition, particularly from natural gas, and in some markets because of renewable energy.
Okay. Janet McCabe, I just wonder if you have a thought on that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I agree. We are finding in this country that coal is not competitive. Why do we want to be encouraging the further development of a non-renewable fuel that is pumping carbon dioxide into the air, in millions and millions of tons every year, when we know what it's doing to the climate? The industry is acting with its feet here. It is going to cleaner energy, solar, wind, and even natural gas, which is much, much kinder to the climate, not just greenhouse gas emissions, but the kinds of emissions that affect people's health every single day.
Yeah. Well, so let's get back to this underlying approach here that really fascinates me, because I think it's one of the central stories of how environmental regulation has evolved in the United States about, you know, should we be moving from a purely transactional cost benefit analysis, especially when some of the costs and benefits are difficult to really get an accurate handle on, to a broader, even if squishier, public health approach here. I mean, is that the direction that the United States had been going, Janet?
Well, I think it actually is the other direction.
The other direction.
The other direction. So I've been an environmental regulator for many years of my career, and at EPA, there's a very established process for looking at costs and benefits. In both cases, you are trying to project forward, right? So you gather lots of information from the industry, not just the utilities themselves, but people who make and supply and service or install the control equipment, and you do your best job at projecting what those costs are going to be. Because rulemaking in this country goes through an extensive public process, everybody gets to weigh in and say, no, you know, you've said too much, you've said too little, and you come out with your best estimate. Of course, later, you can see how good those projections really were. And interestingly, in this case, it actually would be ascertainable what the utilities have had to pay to comply with this rule, because they all already have.
Right.
And there's starting to be information out there that the costs are less than what we projected in 2011, which is what you would expect.
But
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Forgive me for interrupting, but I just wonder, does the Clean Air Act require that, say, if a rule finds that a rule would produce a certain amount of cost and the benefits are actually less, does the Clean Air Act therefore then require that the rule be eliminated?
No, absolutely not. There's nothing in the Clean Air Act that says that the monetized benefits have to be greater than the cost. There's actually nothing in OMB's guidance for doing regulatory impact analysis that says that either. The idea here is that information needs to be put in front of the public and in front of the policymakers so that they can make a judgment. And the challenge with doing environmental regulation is that while it's fairly straightforward to try to project the cost, it is not to project the health benefits. And just here's one example. Back in 2011, there were very few studies that actually quantified health benefits associated with mercury specifically. We just had a couple of studies that looked at IQ point loss from recreational fishers who consumed a lot of fish, right? Mm-hmm. Well, since then, there is more science now that shows, or at least strongly suggests, that the benefits are much greater, that there are cardiovascular benefits from mercury exposure reduction as well as neurological benefits, and that the numbers are much greater. Well, we didn't know that back in 2011, right? So we did the best we could. And that's not even taking into account the whole co-benefits issue, which if I could say a word about that now.
Yes,
there's also, there's nothing in the Clean Air Act that says co-benefits are not appropriate to consider either. And it sort of defies logic to me. The analogy that I often use is if you quit smoking because you want to reduce your chance of getting lung cancer, you're getting a raft of other health benefits associated with that as well. Those are real to you and they're meaningful to you. You may not be able to put a dollar sign on them, but they happen, and they happen along with whatever you're doing to reduce your lung cancer risk. That's the same thing that's happening here.
You know, it's interesting that you use that analogy because that was the one that my mind was sort of drifting towards, although I was going to say that if, say, if someone in a family decides to quit smoking, not only do they enjoy the health benefits, but their family members who would no longer be exposed to the secondhand smoke are also enjoying those health benefits as well.
Absolutely. You've expanded my analogy. Thank you.
Okay. Umair Irfan, just want to have you chime back in here. What's your thoughts on Janet McCabe's, you know, what she's telling us about what the Clean Air Act requires and doesn't?
Right. I mean, the Clean Air Act, I mean, the National Bureau of Economic Research has looked into the benefits of it since it's gone into effect, you know, since all the various amendments have been added since the 1970s. And they've, you know, in terms of estimates, they've said it's added trillions of dollars to the economy. And that's in terms of things like, you know, more labor productivity, in terms of like boosted land values in areas that were once heavily polluted. They've done, you know, county by county studies looking at areas that did meet air quality targets and next to ones that didn't. And they were able to actually see, you know, economic benefits. This is stuff that took, you know, decades to research and tease out, but there definitely was a benefit. The problem was when the Clean Air Act was first put out, you didn't have all this kind of information. This is something that you kind of have to look back and assess. But history shows us that these air quality regulations, a lot of environmental regulations, have huge economic benefits. It's just that they're hard to price up front the way pollution control measures are. And that's kind of what makes the calculation a little bit more difficult in terms of making policy that's been that, you know, everybody can agree
to. Right. So Umair and Janet, in a minute or two, I'm going to turn to a doctor who's going to bring us up to speed on what we know about the health effects of mercury. But we have a lot of callers who want to join us. We're talking this hour about the EPA's new proposal to change the way costs and benefits for mercury regulations in coal-fired power plants are accounted for. And we're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Let's just quickly go to Tom, who's calling from Green Bay, Wisconsin. Tom, you're on the air.
Hi there. In the state of Wisconsin, every body of water, every stream, river, and lake, and we have more than 10,000 lakes in Minnesota, Green Bay, Lake Michigan, there is a fish consumption advisory for pregnant women and small children because of mercury. I mean, this is, it's already out there. This all happened because of the Clean Air Act, and we had a problem with acid rain. And so all the power companies in the state of Wisconsin switched from buying southern soft coal with a lot of sulfur to buying western coal, Wyoming, Montana, with hard coal and mercury. The question was posed then, and the power companies told us, oh, don't worry about it. Now, every body of water in the state of Wisconsin has a mercury advisory.
Wow. Well, Tom, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Michael, who's calling from Montpelier, Vermont. You're on the air, Michael.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. The previous caller mentioned something about the health risks, and all you do, the states have advisories, but the Food and Drug Administration warns pregnant women not to eat more than 6 ounces of canned tuna a week because of the mercury concentration in the larger predatory fish. Also, not only at the national level, but internationally, there's now a legally binding treaty on mercury, which the U.S. was the first party to. That treaty has now been ratified by over 100 countries, with India and China and all the big countries that have coal-fired power plants now agreeing to reduce their emissions of mercury and level the playing field across the world to do so. So my question for the experts is, what kind of implications would this new rule, if adopted, have on the U.S. obligations under the legally binding treaty on mercury?
For international law, yeah, the Minamata Convention, I think you're referring to there, Michael. Thank you for your call. Janet McCabe, do you have a response to him, for him?
Well, as Umair mentioned earlier, this rule itself would not roll back the standards, but it does open the door legally to doing so. So that would be absolutely the wrong direction to go in terms of the United States doing what it should do to reduce mercury under the Minamata Convention.
Okay. Well, Janet and Umair, stand by here for just a second, because I want to welcome into the conversation Celia Chen. She's joining us from Hanover, New Hampshire. She's the director of Dartmouth Toxic Metals Superfund Research Program and a professor of biological sciences at Dartmouth College. Celia Chen, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me, Meghna.
So first of all, you know, we've been talking broadly about the potential health effects of mercury from mercury emissions in coal-fired power plants. Just give us a quick rundown of what the specific health concerns are.
Well, mercury has long been known to be a neurotoxicant and has been known to have effects, as Janet mentioned, on IQ and also on neurodevelopment endpoints in children. But in recent years, pretty much since the risk assessment was done back in 2011, we've also come to know more about the effects on cardiovascular health as well as the immune system. And even more recently, we're starting to see that mercury exposure interacts with infectious diseases like malaria. And so it's not like time has shown us that health effects are diminishing, but we actually know more about increasing health effects.
Okay. So you co-authored, you're one of the authors on a science briefing regarding mercury and these emissions rules around mercury. And you heard us a little earlier in the hour saying that the EPA now estimates that the health benefits from reducing the amount of mercury coming out of these plants is roughly $6 million. I mean, they've ratcheted it way down. But in your science briefing, though, you say that recent studies show that the benefits could be in the billions of dollars? Tell me more about that.
I think that it has to do with two aspects of this, and I'm not an economist, but certainly the co-benefits, which you all have already been talking about, but also related to what Janet mentioned was when at an earlier time we actually didn't account for these other health effects, and we also did not account for the effects of consuming marine and coastal fish, which, as it turns out, is really 80% of the fish that people in the U.S. consume. So that benefit of reducing mercury that goes into all of those fish, which is really most of the fish we eat, has not been taken into account.
Oh, but can I just just to reiterate, to be sure that I heard you correctly, that beforehand, when analyzing the benefit, they weren't even looking at, broadly speaking, the majority of fish that Americans eat, if we're talking about mercury concentration? Wow, okay.
Yeah, so that was not because at the time we didn't have very much data. And so as Janet mentioned, you know, it was the best that EPA could do at the time. But, you know, 7 years has gone by. There's a lot more data out there. And I think the group of scientists who put together the science brief really felt that we wanted to make sure that the, you know, that accounting for all of the benefits, the true benefits, needed to be done in order to actually protect public health.
I see. So then, Celia Chen, what do you see as the bottom line here? Again, I want to reiterate, this is just a proposal from the EPA to change this, the cost-benefit analysis for mercury emissions. But, I mean, do you see it? Are you concerned about the direction that it might go?
Well, I am, certainly. I think another aspect of this that you all haven't mentioned is that the actual Clean Air Act, and Janet should correct me if I'm wrong, allows for a review every 5 years to see whether the MATS is effective in the way that it is supposed to be. And now in a world of climate change and all kinds of environmental change, the impacts on mercury cycling and accumulation in, you know, food webs up to fish that humans consume is changing. And we need to be able to be flexible about that because some of the science is showing that some of the environmental changes are actually could result in increases in mercury in fish. So these are things that we need to be able to be flexible about and constantly evaluate.
Right. Well, Celia Chen is a professor of biological sciences at Dartmouth College and director of Dartmouth's Toxic Metals Superfund research program there. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, we're going to come back here in just a minute and talk a lot more about these proposed EPA changes. We'll be right back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about a new EPA proposal to really change the way costs and benefits are analyzed or accounted for when it comes to mercury emissions from coal-fired power plants. Now, this is really important because costs and benefits underlie a lot of the reasoning behind a bunch of EPA rules. I'm joined today by Umair Irfan. He's a reporter who covers the environment for Vox. And Janet McCabe is also with us. She served in and led the Office of Air and Radiation at the Environmental Protection Agency during the Obama administration. And Umair and Janet, we've got a bunch of callers who want to join us. So let me just get a couple of them in here. Let's go first to Joe, who's calling from Bristol, Tennessee. Joe, you're on the air.
Hello, Meghna. Great show. Wonderful topic. Quick thing here. There's a publication that I get access to here in this area, being on the edge of coal country, Kentucky, West Virginia, Virginia. The name of the monthly paper is the Appalachian Voice, and it's primarily a pro-environment read. And it deals a lot with the political side of this issue, as well as the extractive side, the history of it, legislation as to what's happening now. It's a great resource for anybody who wants to get kind of the nitty gritty behind the scenes type stuff. But the people that are calling the shots in Washington have kids and grandkids. And I think, you know, leaving a leaving a clean planet should be our number one priority. It shouldn't be politicized.
Right.
And anybody who wants to check out that paper would learn a lot about what's really going on and how people vote, how people are voting on these issues.
Oh, well, Joe, thank you for your call and a enthusiastic plug there for the Appalachian Voice. Thank you again, Joe, for calling from Bristol, Tennessee. Janet McCabe, let me turn back to you for a second here, because you know, I keep reiterating this, but it's factual. We should say that this is a proposal from the EPA right now to change these mercury rules. But the reason why it really caught a lot of people's attention, certainly caught my attention, is if the EPA does change the fundamental way cost and health benefits are calculated, right? Like ignoring those co-benefits as we've been talking about, doesn't that undermine or change the justification for a whole host of rules that have been put out by EPA? And could it open those up to legal challenges?
Yeah, that's a good point. There's clearly a larger agenda here. And EPA has made it clear that this is an issue that they want to change. And it would affect all rules going forward. Cost and benefit analysis would be done in a different way, could lead EPA to reopen some past rules. They're doing that with some. For example, they've put out a proposal to weaken a rule that we did to strengthen the requirements for wood burning devices, mm-hmm. wood stoves and backyard burners. So they're opening up some things, but it certainly would affect things going forward and arguably could spread to other agencies within the federal government that do health, public health and public safety related rules.
And Umair, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think this has been a running theme throughout the entire Trump administration. When unpacking or undoing a lot of the Obama rules, one of the key recurring elements is that they think that the Obama administration overestimated the benefits and underestimated the costs. And so this has been the justification for the EPA to challenge things like fuel economy standards, the Obama administration's Clean Power Plan for limiting greenhouse gases from power plants. And similarly, just before this mercury rule was announced, like a few weeks earlier, they talked about changing the rules for new coal power plants for the CO2 emissions they're allowed to emit. And all of them are using basically the same essential calculus that the benefits are far, far dwarfed by the costs to the industry. And that's why these rules need to be rolled back.
Yeah. Well, Janet, let me turn back to you, though, because I'm still – this is a little wonky here, but the EPA rulesmaking process is what it is. And I'm just saying that there has been some response from, say, for example, Jeff Homestead. He's a former EPA air administrator. He now is with a group called Bracewell LLP, and they represent energy industry clients, so a lot of revolving doors here. But he has said in a statement that really he doesn't necessarily see a problem with the EPA proposal, because he says that EPA just shouldn't justify regulations like the mercury emissions where all of the benefits or virtually all of the benefits are co-benefits. So it could instead use the extant parts of the Clean Air Act directly to, you know, address particulates if you want. Your thoughts?
Well, the Clean Air Act does not say that EPA should only consider the benefits associated with the particular pollutant that's being regulated. The Clean Air Act is about protecting public health. And so OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, in its directive to all the federal agencies, has said for decades that agencies should consider the direct and indirect costs and benefits of the rules that they're doing. So EPA has been following that OMB guidance in looking at co-benefits this way. And you know, if it's a matter of principle, it shouldn't matter whether the co-benefits are large or small, right?
Mm-hmm.
You either have a policy that counts them or you don't.
Okay. Well, but Umair, isn't the coal industry here saying, what about the principle of a fair accounting of these costs, you know?
Right. I mean, that is kind of their justification. But on the other hand, this EPA, the Trump administration's EPA, I mean, they've been happy to invoke co-benefits when it suits their needs. When they were talking about rolling back fuel economy standards, one of the justifications was that raising fuel economy standards raises the price of new cars, and new cars are safer. Therefore, in order to make Americans safer on the road, we need to lower the prices of new cars by lowering fuel economy standards. Similarly, when EPA Administrator Wheeler was talking about the new source performance rules for lowering the CO2 limits for new coal plants, he was asked, how does this improve the health and the environment of Americans? And his response was, well, coal is one of the cheapest forms of energy, and therefore, by increasing access to electricity and energy, we improve the health of Americans. So when they want to connect those dots, when it suits their needs, they're pretty happy to do that.
Yeah. And just to underscore something that, Janet, you mentioned a little earlier, when we say the industry here, we're talking about the coal industry being supportive of the EPA proposal, because the utilities that are actually running these plants and burning the coal, they've installed all these scrubbers already, and I'm reading here that they don't necessarily want the rules to be rolled back. They have sunk their costs into cleaning the mercury out of their emissions.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. They've been very vocal about that, asking the administration not to do this. They've sunk their costs. They're getting rate recovery or seeking rate recovery so that they can pass these costs on to the ratepayers, which they can do if an environmental regulation is required by law. If all of a sudden it does not become required by law, then that is a great deal of uncertainty for them. And you made the point about uncertainty earlier on in the program. In my decades of working with industry on environmental regulations, certainty is something that they always talk about. They would rather have a clear rule that gives them what their standards are and then be done with it and then go back and forth on this. So yeah. So it's frustrating to see this administration claiming that they are serving the industry when in fact they're creating massive uncertainty. Same with the car rules. That creates massive uncertainty for that industry.
Mm. Well, let's go to D.C., who's calling from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. You're on the air.
Hello. I try to look underneath the superficial news arguments of the day. And I would like to say, after five decades, of study of various things, including biochemistry, that the cost-benefit argument is a false one in its extreme superficiality. Mercury is the second most poisonous element on the periodic table to humans. Plutonium is number one, the element used in nuclear weapons. And what Donald Trump has been doing, his main agenda, his whole presidency and before, is to increase the wealth of the wealthiest few. That means the executives of the large corporations, including the fossil fuel industry. And this is the same as the denial of climate change, where basically he's trying to protect the wealth of executives and these large corporations from facing the liability that they know they're facing for the future for all the damage they've caused over the decades.
Right. Well, DC, I'm going to take it back from you there because your point about climate change is actually something that another caller wants to chime in on. Thank you for your call, DC. Let's go to Nate, who's calling from Milwaukee. Nate, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you very much for having me. I was going to start out by saying this proposal shows how eager the Trump administration is to be corrupt on pretty much any environmental issue. If you look at Robert, or the other person already beat me, mercury is such a bad neurotoxin. If you drink it, you'll probably end up dying from a glass. Now, Bob Murray himself has lied both about global warming, but also about some of the deaths of miners that worked for his company. So it shows how little he cares about truth, human life, and the environment. And for the Trump administration to be eager to please him, both through its appointees and also, I suspect, their hoped-for campaign contributions, shows how eager it is to please other horrible people. And what? I think that this is something that is, if it goes through, going to hurt people and is another subsidy to these organizations, not only through taxpayer dollars, which Trump has already tried to spend to help them, but through people's property and life.
Yeah, Nate, well, thank you for your call. Let me just take it back from you there, because I just want to clarify for some listeners that Nate was talking about Murray Energy Chairman and CEO Robert Murray, of course, Murray Energy being the big coal company, who, in fact, in October 2017, did tell PBS NewsHour, he claimed, quote, "We do not have a climate change problem." So just denying it out and out. out. Nate, thank you for your call. Umair Irfan, I'm just wondering if there's anything in those calls that that you want to respond to.
Yeah, I think that both of the callers were kind of hitting on a common theme, and that is that the dollar amount doesn't tell the whole story. Even though we're talking about cost and benefits, and even though attaching, you know, a price tag to people's hospital visits or to, you know, degraded environmental quality is what we're talking about here, it doesn't really fully capture the full impact of this. I mean, one of the earlier callers talked about, you know, fishing. I mean, if you're in a community that counts on tourism and that the fish are no longer edible or people are being cautioned against eating them, I mean, that can hurt your revenue. Or just things like, you know, just the lost enjoyment of the environment. Those are all things that are much, much harder to capture than just the public health benefits. And if we overlook that, I mean, we're overlooking some of the significant impacts that coal burning and oil burning has on the environment.
Mm. Janet McCabe, this has come up a couple of times during this conversation, that many of the benefits are harder to capture than the strict costs, right? Because you can say how much does it cost to install a scrubber. But so for as long as the benefits are harder to get a handle on, you know, does the underlying philosophy behind the Clean Air Act, it's going to be vulnerable to criticism?
Well, I hope not. Umair cited a minute ago the retrospective studies that have been done to show how much improving public health actually contributes to the economy of the United States. Mm-hmm. And, you know, air pollution in this country has gone down 70% over the last few decades. The economy has grown. People are healthier, and the economy has benefited from that. So I think we can look back and see that these things really have had a very positive impact on all aspects of the economy.
Yeah. So what do you think the long-term consequences might be if these rules changes go through? I mean, it's a long process, but if they happen, I mean, could we see some utilities that decide that they're not going to use their pollution controls anymore?
Well, we have seen that in cases where rules allow rules either allow or rules are changed such that utilities can reduce the amount of pollution control they use in a way that saves money, they do it. And so that certainly could happen here. We're many steps away from that, as you've already said. Almost of equal or bigger concern is the precedent that this rulemaking would set. And, you know, one of the things that's so bizarre about this is that and shows how much this particular action is a vehicle to get this policy changed is that here we are, the rule's been implemented. There's all this new science, as Celia noted, on the health benefits. And yet this proposal is relying on the information that EPA gathered for the 2011 rule,
huh,
right? And saying, well, you know, we're making a determination now based on these way out of date, both cost and benefit numbers, that it's not appropriate or necessary. So in that illustrates how artificial this is in some ways.
Well, Umair Irfan, we've got a minute to go here. What are the next steps that EPA will follow? Is there's a public comment period about this proposal?
That's right. It has to be published in the Federal Register, and there's 60 days for people and the general public and as well as utilities and stakeholders to comment on it. But the Federal Register is closed right now because of the government shutdown.
So it would be 60 days from the time that the Register reopens?
That's right.
Okay. And then and then thereafter, what happens?
Well, then thereafter, I mean, I think it goes through the finalization process. And then if there are any other states and other groups that want to challenge the rule, then they can go ahead and start that litigation process as well.
Huh. Well, Umair Irfan is a reporter who covers climate change, energy, and the environment for Vox. We have a link to his reporting at onpointradio.org. And I should also say that Umair is a contributor to the public radio program Science Friday. Umair, thank you so very much for joining us and for walking us through the details of the EPA proposal on mercury. Very much appreciated. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Meghna.
And Janet McCabe, who served in and led the Office of Air and Radiation in the EPA during the Obama administration, played a key role in the framing of these mercury and air toxic standards, and now a senior law fellow at the Environmental Law and Policy Center. Janet McCabe, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Meghna. It was great.
And by the way, folks, go to onpointradio.org there and leave a comment about this hour and what you think about the proposed changes to mercury emissions standards at the EPA. is considering. And while you're at the website, you can also subscribe to the On Point newsletter. It's right there on the homepage of onpointradio.org. And in the newsletter, you'll get weekly reflections and insights about the show, both from me and from my colleague, David Folkenflik. That's at onpointradio.org. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.